Welcome to Trans Canada Stories. I'm Sin Sweeney, and I'm joined by the lovely co-host, Emma Stanley. And in Trans Canada Stories, we're all about going beyond binary and telling stories of trans people as people. Welcome to the show.
So, welcome to Trans Canada Stories. Today we have in studio by Zoom, Bea Adair. Bea recently relocated to Nova Scotia and is having a chat with us today. Hello, Bea.
Hello. How is it going?
It's going really well. Tell us a little bit about you.
Well, my name is Bea. That is literally my entire name, legally and everything.
Can you spell it for me?
Bea.
Perfect. That's good because I've had a few people ask me about you and they spelt it differently. They've
you
made
would
it
be
longer.
Surprised. You would be surprised. People are like, so is it like B-E-E?
Yeah, B-E-A? Like Bumble?
B-E? Yeah. I actually was checking into a hotel once and the person behind the counter was like, oh, I'm really sorry. For whatever reason, when we got your reservation, they only wrote down your initial. And I was like, no, that's my name. And they looked at me and I pulled out my driver's license and she goes, who's your mother? Like, what were they thinking?
I am.
Yeah.
I chose my name. No,
exactly. I sure did.
I own it.
I've had so many people ask me about siblings. If I have like sibling A and sibling C and I'm like, no, just me.
Oh, that's great. You know, actually, we did a recording with B and I. We did a recording it was a few weeks ago, and I actually tried to title it with an A, and so I could shorten it to an A with B and C, which is so bad.
Q and A with B and C.
Yeah, there you go. We've got to get the E in there somewhere. No, well, it's great because Trans Canada Story, we took a little bit of a break over the holiday season. It's now we're almost to the end of February, and Emma and I are up here in Halifax. Bea is, I'm not going to say in Yarmouth. You are over by the Digby region, which is very different. And you have made it here by way of Alberta, a bright, shiny rainbow of a province. And maybe you can tell us about your journey here.
Yes, it was a long time coming. My partner and I lived in Alberta. I mean, I grew up there. That's where I was born and raised, but my partner's from New York City. So they moved from New York City to Alberta in a very, very, very small town, literally the most conservative riding, federal riding in all of Canada. So it's been a long time coming. And being queer and trans, neurodivergent, all of these different things in a small town in a very conservative and religious area is not the funnest time. So we decided, hey, let's move. Let's get out of here. So we put an offer in on a house here. We're about 25 minutes outside Digby. And we were here like a month and a half later. So it was a quick process.
What made you pick like the Atlantic region? Because you are about like, I guess in Canada, maybe as far away from where you were as you can be, unless maybe you could go north. But what made you pick the East Coast?
Well, we wanted to be on the coast, on a coast. I have some family in BC, so we were looking around, but nobody can afford to live in BC unless they make $1 million every 2 weeks. so we expanded our search a little bit more, and I had heard amazing things about Nova Scotia. I'd never been here before, so it was kind of a gigantic leap of faith / experiment, but we're really enjoying it. We were able to get like a good chunk of property, and we live in the forest in a log cabin, and our dogs are soaking it up.
Living the dream. That sounds great. And you're close to the ocean as well.
Yeah, we're like on St. Mary, what is it? St. Mary's Cove, St. Mary's Bay, I think. Something. St. Mary's Bay, I think. I need to learn this more. But so it's not technically the ocean, but it's the ocean in my eyes. And it's like a 3-minute drive down the road. So it's pretty cool.
Wonderful. Love it. You can smell the salty air.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Probably.
And I've discovered a new hobby of beach combing and rock hounding. I am a magpie. So everything.
Bringing home half the beach is a time-honored tradition on the East Coast. Yep. Every time we have family visiting from anywhere else at my place, they have to go down to the beach and they come back with the bulging pockets. Mm-hmm. Yep, you have to do it.
I've learned to bring buckets with me. I don't know where I'm going to put them all. Our house is quite small, but I will find a space.
So I'm kind of curious, B, you work in equity work. And I'm curious if there's been a change in your clients, not just in terms of the reception, but of the needs from coast to coast. Is there something fundamentally different about different places and how those places react to equity?
I mean, I'm still pretty new here. We've only been here, I don't think it's even been 3 months yet. So I haven't done a ton of work that's specific to Nova Scotia, but we're in a very rural area. So, you know, it comes with very similar challenges where a lot of people, you know, they're not yet aware of the importance of this work. And, you know, everyone's heard of equity, diversity, inclusion. You can't not know what that means, but there's still a good percentage of the population that are like, pretty diverse. Look at us. We all get along. Everything's fine. So there's a lot of work to do in beginning those conversations. And seeing as I lived in the middle of nowhere in Alberta, that was my primary work that I did, is, you know, starting these conversations and helping teams discover that buy-in and that reason, that why, right? So it can be tough conversations. You know, you meet a lot of resistance at times, but for the most part, it's, you know, you get to open people's eyes for the first time, and that's kind of awesome. So I imagine there will be a lot of parallels to that. I've worked with, you know, everything from like a 3-person staff up to large organizations, you know, governments and all kinds of different groups. So it's a little bit different depending on, you know, where they're at in their journey and, you know, what concepts we need to introduce at what time. And, you know, a lot of my previous projects have been starting from the absolute ground and developing a vocabulary and sharing, learning, and creating this whole new thing for people to look at and try and understand, right? And then you can dive into a little bit more, you know, about prejudice and, you know, privilege and bias and all of these things, where you have to start doing the hard work. There's a lot of reflection and understanding, you know, that privilege doesn't mean that everything's perfect. Privilege simply means that in one tiny piece of your identity, you're not oppressed, right? Or not as oppressed as somebody else. Everything's a spectrum, right? There's no such thing as somebody who's 100% oppressed, and there's no such thing as people who are 100% privileged. There are a good handful of people on very close to the ends on either side. But, you know, so part of that buy-in is helping people understand that this work impacts everybody. It's not, you know, we have to do this work to make others feel good or to help them, you know, feel like they fit in. It's literally about all of us.
About everybody.
There's kind of a misconception about what diversity means, right? Mm-hmm. Diversity is just there. You put two people in a room and it's like, boom, there's diversity, even if they're identical twins, right? We're all different. We all perceive things differently. We all have different experiences. And that shapes who we are. And that affects, you know, how we, you know, translate things in our brain and how we want to respond to things and how we want to react. So diversity is just there. So it's not necessarily, you know, you think of someone who uses a mobility aid or a person of color, right? It's not just that. That's a huge part of it. Mm-hmm. And folks that have, you know, visible oppression, those are the ones that need the most help. But everyone fits in to that bubble somewhere, right? If you're a single parent, if you rely on public transit because you can't drive from a medical condition or you can't afford a vehicle, right? It's everyone has a role to play and something to gain from doing this work. And it is really, really cool to be able to share that with people and say, no, this is for you also.
It's rewarding, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a super rewarding process. And I think, Emma, it was you that told me, we had heard it somewhere along the way, but when we were talking about inclusion, equity, and diversity, diversity is the room, it's the party. And is it equity is allowing, you know, everybody to give input on what's on the playlist, and inclusion is letting everybody have an opportunity to come up and be the DJ and play the songs, you know, as well, and kind of breaking it down that way. But I think often people, when you're so used to looking through one lens, they try to simplify it and they say, oh, you know, I'll just be nice to everybody. I'm just nice to everybody. And it's letting, you know, exactly to what you were saying, it's that no, not everybody, you know, being nice to everybody isn't taking into account what each individual person might need to fully thrive in that room with you.
Of equity versus equality, right? Equality means you treat everyone the exact same way. Everyone has the exact same access to resources. It's good in theory, you know, it's a good step to make, but it's not going to work for everybody. I like to use the example, you know, if I'm a baseball coach,
I love this one,
and I have a team of kids that want to play this game for the first time, and I say, awesome. And I go to the store and I buy 20 ball gloves, and they're the exact same ball gloves because I want everyone to be treated equally. I get to the ball diamond and I start handing them out. And one kid says, hey, I'm left-handed. Another one said, no, I wanna be the bat catcher and I need a special glove, right? Maybe somebody doesn't have a left hand to put a glove on, right? So while my intention was really, really good, it's not going to work, right? Whereas if I go to that first session at the Ball Diamond and I say, hey, welcome everybody, let's talk, tell me about you, you know, how do you play, what position do you like to play, do you throw with your right hand or your left hand? It's about giving some thought to each individual situation and then being informed about, you know, what might help them most, but also talking to them and asking them, hey, what do you need? What is going to make you the best ball player that you can be? And, you know, approaching that differently. So yes, it's going to look like somebody gets more than somebody else, but all it is about leveling the playing field, right? If somebody's already got a brand new glove, they don't need one, right? So, you know, a lot of people get really defensive and go, well, why did they get this? You know, you think of like workplace accommodations, you know, well, why do they get to work from home? Well, because, you know, they're having some pretty awful stomach issues right now and can't venture very far from the bathroom. Yeah.
The most comprehensive, unquestioned accommodation I've ever seen after years of working in restaurants, smokers. They get like a half hour of extra breaks every day and nobody asks. Because nobody wants to work with a smoker who has not had a cigarette today.
We need to flip that script and say, do you want to work with someone who's going to pass out halfway through your shift? And then you have to deal with a medical emergency also, because that's the alternative.
When you talked about ADHD in the beginning, you know, something that we do really well here and I'm super proud of is that, well, first of all, like we're an office full of ADHD. There's a lot of that happening. And but we're all very different on what we need with that and what we need to work as well. And like with Emma and I, like we just recognize that sometimes, like, yeah, it's a work from home day, or sometimes I just need to, you know, one of us just needs to decompress and take a day. And it's like, okay, well, we're not gonna counter check all of the hours specifically, right, Emma? Because it's like when you come back or when I come back, we're like three times as productive because we've been able just to set back. And there's that misinterpretation that, you know, ADHD people are lazy, and it's not. It's just when they're going, they are productive, like five people in the room. And if they need to like unpack and like recharge for a little bit, it's well worth giving them the opportunity to do that.
Well, and there's a perception with accommodations that they're entirely reactive, that the accommodation happens after. But taking the scheduling here at Simply Good Form, for example, if I know that I can take a day off, then I also know that it is okay for me to burn super hard today. So if I'm in a groove and something's going well and I end up working 10 hours today or 12 hours today, like with breaks, et cetera, but basically I'm on for that long, I know I can do that knowing that tomorrow, if I need to, I can rest. In a more typical and more rigid system, I would never do that because I'm not going to work late today because I have to be in work at 8 o'clock tomorrow. And with any kind of accommodation, it gives people this feeling of safety, which allows them to push harder when they have the opportunity to do that.
Absolutely. And a huge part of that process is, you know, examining our definition of what professionalism is and challenging really colonial processes and, you know, that corporate garbage about, you know, you need to work from 9 to 5, you get 15 minutes break, you get half an hour lunch, that's it, that's all. Who is that benefiting?
Oh, I remember working jobs like that where I'd have a timer. I'd have 15 minutes for a break and you can really do nothing in 15 minutes. Like it's actually, I remember feeling more stressful because I remember as a teenager, I remember, oh, I'm kind of hungover and I need a little longer. Now that's my own fault coming to work hungover. But if I had had a half an hour, I would have been much better going back in. Okay, that's not a good example. But like everyone's nodding their head out there that's listening going, they've been in that situation. I'm sure.
But it's that exact same thing though, right? Like, would you rather have an employee who can't function because they don't have their 15 minute break for another 3 hours? Or do you want them to go take a couple of extra minutes, refresh themselves, get a drink of water, grab a coffee, have a bite to eat, pop some Tylenol, whatever that looks like, and then come back to work and be able to function for those 3 hours? That's what everybody misses, right? Accommodation isn't giving somebody an advantage. It's doing yourself a favor because, A, you're going to get people working for you who say, hey, I'm taken care of. They're respecting me and they understand that I have needs, right? Yeah. And you're going to get better work out of them and they're more likely to stick around, right? Instead of having people come and go and hiring and firing and retiring and all of the things.
Exactly. Yeah. It's costly. And, you know, it's reading the room. It's like, if you're a manager and you can have like bring that empathy to the room, be able to read the room a little bit. And again, not treat everybody equally. Look at where they're at. You're going to have a bit more productive, happy team that want to work with you.
B and I are working together on a presentation that we're going to be doing soon. It's a roadmap for companies who want to approach equity work from the perspective of top-down management and with less of a focus on sort of personal improvement. And it's been really interesting to look at the differences between personal equity improvement and then sort of spatial or organizational equity improvement and the different skill sets that those require. So maybe B, you can give us an example of the difference between like improving equity for yourself and improving equity in a space that you control.
Absolutely. I think we can go back to the workplace accommodations example. You know, you put in a ramp because you have a new employee who uses a wheelchair, right? That ramp isn't going to just benefit that one person. Right? Maybe there's someone who breaks their ankle and they can use the ramp because it's easier, right? Accommodations aren't necessarily only for permanent situations. Mm. You know, you're going to have, you know, maybe there's somebody who has a vision impairment and that ramp is going to be a lot easier for them to navigate, right? So when it comes back to that equity thing again, right? If we went from equality to equity, where we're giving everybody what they need, awesome. But we can take it a step further, right? Instead of, you know, treating each person individually and what they need, why don't we take a step back and look at what the systemic problem is, right? What's the bigger picture, right? Where, what barriers are affecting more people? What change can we make that isn't just a band-aid solution for one scenario or one situation. How can we make a bigger change that's going to have a wider impact?
I love that, because you can have somebody within an organization that says, yeah, I'm really inclusive, I work well with my team. But if you're not looking at the bigger picture within the organization, you know, people move departments, the clients that you're serving might be interacting with your department one day, but maybe in another department the next, depending on how your structure is set up. And if you're not taking a holistic top-down approach, inevitably you're going to fail, like, on having that good strategy in place for your organization. I love that.
Absolutely.
It's the problem with any system that isn't designed to accommodate people who aren't necessarily very good at that activity. So if your entire equity strategy is relying on a single person because they do a lot of out-of-work hours, because they have a lot of lived experience that they can bring to the table, your strategy will fail the moment that person leaves. So you've got all of these companies that are doing well for now. But how does it move into the future, and how does it continue to grow alongside the company as the needs of that company change, as the staffing changes? And I think that we're moving to a place where, as you said, it's almost impossible not to know EDIA. If you're working in HR, if you own a company, if you deal with staffing at all, you know this acronym. And for the listeners, EDIA is equity, diversity.
what is it again? Yeah, equity and equity diversity, inclusion, accessibility, and acceptance. If you're going to do the A squared,
and
really good note, actually. Can I jump in on that real quick?
Yeah.
One of the biggest concepts that people struggle with is, what acronym do I use? What order do the letters go in? What right. words do I need to say? It doesn't freaking matter, right? It's the process. It's what those words mean. It doesn't matter what order they go in, right? You can make up all kinds of acronyms, but it all means the same thing. It means working to make people feel like they belong.
Exactly. So
that's a really good example, like live example of, the letters don't really matter. Sure, for branding, maybe you want some consistency, but that's not the big worry we need to have.
For people that, you know, this is a good opportunity for people that maybe they're in an organization, they don't have a budget. I mean, although ideally it would be great if their organization is taking it seriously and bring it on board, but we do get some questions, and I thought I would throw out a couple of questions people have sent us this month that maybe you can throw your lens on and give them some free advice here to help them out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So with the roadmap, you're going to be talking about that, what you said there, Emma, looking at the individual piece and then also within your organization. So how you can kind of get past the systemic piece.
Yeah, with a roadmap strategy, you really want to look past the sort of personal growth aspect. It is wonderful to take a course or a piece of training and update your language, make sure you're on point. But if you're not bringing those concepts into spaces you control, and everyone has a space where they have some kind of authority, whether it's at work through a team or a space, like a physical space, a classroom, a hallway, a staffing room, a janitor's closet, but also into social spaces. Maybe you are the moderator on an online forum. Maybe you are one of the more consistent players in your team or on your online. Like if you're consistently play PUBG, you can bring that attitude. You can bring those concepts into those spaces where you have authority. And for a roadmap strategy, that's really more what we're looking at. Of course, you know, there are trainings available for personal growth, and we do provide those as well.
Okay, so question time. A couple of questions I'd love to throw out here to you. So we had somebody that wrote in and they were looking for some advice. They were on the hiring side. Somebody had filled out their application and they had made a joke about the pronoun piece. They had kind of created this unique title for themselves where they were given the opportunity to share their pronouns. they wanted to get some advice around how do they word that, or what is the best way to maybe, you know, convey what the why behind the fact that they're going to be, you know, rejected for this opportunity that they probably otherwise would have been a shoe in.
I think I'm a giant nerd, and I think there's always an opportunity to learn and to help other people understand situations. So the fact that, you know, this person or this organization doesn't want to just say, nope, you're not hired, and leave it like that. They want to do an explanation and help this people or help this person, you know, gain something from a rather negative experience. So, you know, when you're reaching out to them, you know, to say, hey, we've actually chosen someone else, it would be as easy as just saying, would it be okay if I shared some of the reasons why you weren't chosen? Right. And you're giving them permission to be like, nope, I don't care, I'm not interested. But then you're giving yourself an opportunity to say, look, this is, we take, you know, inclusion really, really seriously here. This is really important to us. And when you filled out your application and you put in XYZ in your pronouns, what that says to us is that's not something that you're taking seriously, right? That you're making light of something that's really, really not funny, right? I mean, look at the world around us right now, right? With all of the different governments being more and more conservative and basically encouraging violence against trans people, like there's no time to laugh about that.
No.
Right. And you can maybe have a moment with them and say, yeah, maybe you didn't mean it in a negative way, but we felt like we owed it to you to say, look, this was the difference in you making this or getting this position and you not making this position.
That's a great, great response. And I'm sure they'll be really happy to hear that. Emma, did you want to throw in your two cents?
No, honestly, I think that covers it really nicely. If you are going to make the decision to be in contact with unsuccessful applicants, then having a quick brief on how they could improve for next time would be ideal.
Time to take a break from this Trans Canada Stories for a TD Connected Communities moment.
Trans Canada Stories are your stories, and we're all about connecting communities right across Canada. We would love to hear from you. What topics would you like us to cover? Do you know someone who'd like to be a guest on the show? Follow the link in the show notes and share with us how can we make Trans Canada Stories great for you. That was a TD Connected Community moment, because community matters.
And we had somebody else that had emailed in, and we're going to book a discovery call just to give them some advice. They work in healthcare. I believe they're a surgeon, or they're working in an area where people are coming in for bone density scans, and they want to make their forms more inclusive by adding pronouns. But with bone density, as we know, it changes based on your hormones. And so for a trans person, they want to figure out the best way to find out, okay, so your sex is assigned at birth, a gender identity now, but I guess giving an opportunity to make it comfortable for them to share and know why they're sharing, so that it's like for a positive for them. I guess trying to create that safe space before people step in the room. Would you have any advice on that, on maybe how they could go beyond even just the pronoun box, maybe like something they could write mm-hmm. around the question?
Yeah, absolutely. I think providing a little bit of context goes a really long way, right? Because some people will see a form that says, you know, what was your sex assigned at birth, and instantly become like defensive and go, why is it any of your business, right? Unless you know kind of the physiology behind, you know, how, you know, hormones affect your bone density and how growth is different between, you know, folks of different genders, you might not have ever made that connection before. So just saying, hey, because all of our bodies are different, it's important for us to know a little bit more about your history, You know, you don't have to write a whole paragraph, but, you know, just a really quick explanation that just says, this is why we're asking this question. If you don't want to answer this question, sure, but it might impact the, I guess, like the validity
level of service
of a
we can,
test.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that simply separating the identity, like visually and in your form, separating the identity part. So do ask pronouns at the top, and then later these questions are for medical purposes only. We need to know your bone density, and some events in your life can change that density. And then go through those questions, because first off, pronouns aren't going to tell you anything about their hormones. Especially where we're getting a greater percentage of the trans population who have not gone through more than one puberty. A trans woman who didn't go through male puberty, and a trans woman who was maybe a late transitioner, I'm guessing, and certainly not an expert here or even well-versed, but I'm guessing that is going to make some fairly serious changes. You need a complete medical history. And I'm also, again, guessing that there is more events in a person's life that would change things like bone density, like a history of other bone density related problems with cancer, with transplants. And so it would simply be another medical question as part of your medical history. If you are on HRT, when did you start? Would be a perfectly reasonable question to ask in a medical setting. And from there, you could extrapolate more information and more specific information about your client.
Absolutely. And to add something on to having just the form, you know, you're going to fill out this form, you're going to go into your appointment, they're going to ask you questions anyway. It happens, right? Yeah. They want to make sure that what's on the paper matches what you're going to tell them. So when you are asking these questions, you know, you can go so far by making sure you ask everyone those same questions. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to assume, hey, this looks like a dude, I'm not going to ask him if there's a chance that he's pregnant, right? We can't make that assumption anymore. I have a really close friend of mine who is a transgender guy, and he just had a baby, right? You can't make those assumptions.
And
so,
knowing that is so important, right?
Exactly, exactly. Because that's where a lot of the damage is done, where, you know, we have this preconception, like, this is what you look like, this is what you might be, right? So making sure that you're asking those questions to everybody. And yeah, you're going to get some really weird looks when you say, hey, Mr. Burly Mountain Man, is there any chance that you're pregnant? You might even get some people being offended by that and just say, hey, it's policy. This is just something we have to ask.
Yeah. And that's something that can be on a form and say, we have to ask everybody that. I always like to say too, you know, if you want, you can't do it all on a form or even, you know, on the landing page of a website, but you could have, if you want to know more about why we do this and our policy, here's a link, you know, click on here or contact this person and we'd be happy to explain, you know, our inclusion policies and why. But it's a good example of this person is really wanting to do right. It would be great though if their organization would also look at the bigger picture, because you know that patient that comes to this particular person is going to be so lucky, but the next time they might go and see somebody else. Or who are they being passed along? Who's the radiologist in the room? Are they continuing that empathetic approach to care and ensuring they're creating that safe space? So I think that's it's a really good start. And we're probably just about out of time for here, but we've talked about our upcoming webinar that you can take a look in the show notes. We talked about pronouns on forms and baseball. And if you are listening and not watching, you will see that B's biased cap is, no, you're a big Jays fan. You got the Blue Jays cap on with the pride ring.
And it's the queer one from Pride a couple years ago, actually.
Love it.
All right. Well, B, thank you so much for being with us today. It was a pleasure to have you in, and I look forward to working with you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Okay, well, we'll come down and collect some sea glass with you one day.
Sounds good.
It's the end of the road for this episode of TransCanada Stories.
If you'd like more information on our other programming, check out simplygoodform.com. We hope you'll subscribe to our podcast and that we'll see you again next time.
Come on in.
Here, you have to meet Talbot. Here, come and say hello.
Welcome to our live recording, Talbot. Say hi to the crowd.
Hey, B.
No, come on in. Come in.
Hello. How you doing?
He's down in Digby. B, this is Talbot.
Talbot, nice to meet you. Welcome to TransCanada Stories.
Yeah. We're going to have a segment of Welcome Talbot, because he always pops in right around the same time every morning.
The wrong time.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
Well, I want to interrupt.
Awesome.
You. Just,
yeah, you no,
later.
You don't need to. Okay.
Yeah,
that's what
kiss.
He does every time. Yeah. Every time.
The TransCanada
doesn't matter
camp,
who's
I
in the office.
I got my dog outside. That would be as close as I get.
Yeah, yeah. We don't mind. All furry animals are allowed.